now in America, privacy issues.
Yeah, we'll talk about it, actually. Privacy issues in America are a very big deal right now. They're in the courts. Not that anybody uses Facebook anymore, but the Facebook violation of privacy recently has obviously been an important scandal here in America. And in general, as technology gets stronger, the courts have to deal more and more with issues of privacy. I happen to have with me an old article, but it's just as relevant now as it was when it came out. I don't even know when it came out. I'd have to tell by my Sudoku on the back of this. But anyway, this is from the New York Times. But as technology gets more and more, and therefore most of our lives are on the internet in a very scary and therefore unsafe way, who has access to that data, in particular Big Brother, the government, and the more that they get access to our information. So there's all sorts of legal questions that come out from this. For example, this is 5, 6, 7 years old. I don't remember, but if there's your information is on a GPS server somewhere, can the police use that information, or is it considered an illegal search? This is a case that went to the Supreme Court. And you can imagine, depending on what year this was, how that court would weigh. If that would hit the court again, it might weigh differently than it did 4 or 5 years ago, as we all know. So these issues are coming up all the time, and the precedents are changing because the technology changes. Basically, the premise of this particular article was that the more and more technology progresses, we are giving up more and more of our inalienable right to privacy without us even realizing it, because it's happening in small doses. So the whole topic of privacy, invasion of privacy, who has rights to our information, and what amount of control we have over that is a major topic. The title on the sheet goes back to when I originally prepared this year, and of an event that happened 8 years ago. It was a September event, and that's when I was, what shiur am I going to give in Penn? I'm going to Penn. It's a few months away. I have to prepare a shiur. And then, boom, this terrible story happened. I don't know if this name means anything to anybody. You can Google it, but I'll tell you. There was a boy from Ridgewood, New Jersey, by the name of Tyler Clementi, a nice Italian boy. And he was in Rutgers University. It's the beginning of school. This is September 18th, 19th, 20th, something like that, 2010. And here with my room. And he had a roommate, and his roommate, in cahoots with a down the hall, I don't know what you call that one, I guess dorm mate or whatever, a girl, they planted a private camera, a hidden webcam in their dorm room. Tyler himself, basically the roommate, outed him. Now if you Google the story, it's not so clear that was part of their defense, that it wasn't a hate crime because they didn't do anything, but they outed him as being gay. They put the footage from the webcam at 2 separate times on the internet. They put out an invitation for people to watch at the down-the-hall room, you know, apartment mate's computer live, etc. This was September 18th and 19th, I think, or 19th and 20th or something like that. On September 22nd, Tyler jumped off the George Washington Bridge and committed suicide. Now, it's a horrible, tragic story. It's 8 years later, and we're therefore much more sadly attuned to these type of stories and the rights of communities and all of that. In New Jersey, and to me this was like yesterday, it was a big deal, as you can imagine. The hate crime laws were not up to par in New Jersey yet. This was what started that legislation to happen. In the end, they plea bargained out, and I think they sat 30. One got off completely, and the other one sat 30 days in jail because the hate crime laws were not up to par. When this happened, so I was looking for a topic, and I said, I'm curious. No one would think that this is mutter in halacha to put a webcam in somebody's room, out their friend. It's clearly lashon hara, publicizing it all over, etc. That there was no doubt. But it did raise in my mind the question about privacy in general. What rights do we have in halacha? Do we, and in Hashkafa for that matter, is there a concept of privacy in Judaism? To what extent? Lashon hara aside, if I were to plant a webcam in somebody's room, not to share it, just to invade their privacy, so there's no lashon hara question per se, and lashon hara, obviously, in a camera, there's no talk, so it has to be an expanded definition. What does the Torah have to say about this, both halakhically and hashkafically? So that is the frame, and that is the premise. Okay, I want to start with a little bit of hashkafa on this topic, short dose of that, spend more time on the halakhic areas that are involved. They're actually very interesting. They have ramifications. Please don't walk out of a shiur and change your lives. I don't think that's the personality here anyway. But I must tell you, I sat having coffee this morning and in Manhattan from the still left over from the MMY Shabbaton, and I was in touch with someone about something, and I realized, oh, I probably shouldn't do that without asking permission. And then, so whenever I prepare the shiur, it makes me more sensitive to issues of privacy, and I hope that it will do the same in a positive way for all of you. Is there a value to privacy? Does Judaism, it's an American value, we know that, that's for sure, but is it, I got a lawyer sitting here, so I got to watch out, but is it a Jewish value? Or is it part of our Western world that we think privacy is a value and we then put it over? So if you take a look in number one, we're going to go a little bit in order here. Number one, this is from the Maharal, the Gemara, it's being quoted by the Maharal in this context. The Gemara says, Matam mishufot ki yateido. It's your grandmother taught you this. Why are our fingers shaped the way they are shaped, like nails or spears or whatever? She'im yishma adam davar she'eino hagun yaniach etzpaltav bo'oznav. That if you hear something, if you're exposed to something you don't want to be exposed to, so you can retreat into your private cocoon, stick your fingers in your ears, that's why they fit in there just like that, and then that's good. So it seems, says the Maharal from this, that there does seem to be a value, a sense of being able to shut out the outside world. That's not exactly privacy, but the idea of being allowed to retreat into your own private area. So that's an example, number one. The Mesilas Yesharim has a similar idea. The Mesilas Yesharim says, our behavior in general is influenced by what other people are going to think of us, by our lack of privacy by nature. So it affects the way, and that can be positive or negative, but it affects our behavior. So if someone, for example, is on a trajectory of religious growth, and they're afraid that someone's going to make fun of them, and I'm sure we're all familiar with this type of thing in our lives, so you might not develop the natural way that you would develop because somebody else is whatever. So there's a value for privacy, that our growth, our decision-making, our whatever it might be, should be good for us as opposed to being negatively influenced by external factors. So that's Mesilas Yesharim, that is similar to this idea. The Rambam. The Rambam in number two. In Hilchos Deos. Derech briyato shel adam lihiot nimshach b'deyotav v'masav acharei av v'chavirav noheg kiminhago anshei medinato. Kiminhag anshei medinato. A person's human nature in general is to be influenced by their society, their friends, the people all around them. Okay. What's the ramification of that? Lefikach tzarich adam lehitchaber letzadikim. Therefore, you better be very astute about who you hang out with, because it is natural human nature to be influenced by the people around them, and therefore make sure that you have a good, have a good crowd. V'yitrachek, of course, the corollary of that, v'yitrachek min harishayim, halchim b'choshek, kedei shelo yomu ma'aseyem, and therefore you need to be careful not to hang out with bad influences. Very, very simple. Obviously a pasuk from Mishlei. The Omer Ashrei Ha'ish, and you're supposed to know which Ashrei Ha'ish that is, so go figure. But anyway, v'chein im haya b'medina shemin hagoter ra'im. And now this is the famous part of the Rambam. If you live in a country where the norms are bad, the ein anasheh holchim b'derech yisharah. What should you do if you nebuch wind up in a community that isn't a positive influence? So it's obvious, right? Move. And then the Rambam goes on, and he says, and this is the Rambam writing in the 1100s, not now. Let's say there is no option of a community where there's positive value whatsoever, so there's no community to move to. Moving's not an option. What should you do? Or if you can't move because there's a draft and you're not allowed to move, or it's the only place where there isn't sickness or whatever, so you'll sit alone. And basically the Rambam says, and it does not sound very Rambam-esque, but live in a cave. Privacy is a value. Publicity is only a value to the extent that it serves your private needs. No sense of community, no sense of cooperation, just simply privatize. So we do have sources, hashkafic sources, like the like of the Mesilas Yesharim, but even like the Rambam-type sources, whatever floats your boat, that seem to imply that there is a real value to being in a cocoon and to being private. Okay? Yeah.
Question on that?
Sure.
So when before you said anything, and I was just reading the interpreting it to myself, I didn't get that message. I got the message of like lechatz chila.
Good.
Should be around people that do good things for you, but b'di'avid, if you're in a situation where the people around you would influence you badly, then you go into cocoon.
Excellent. Seem like my next line. Okay, so I'm going to backtrack it for 1 second, and then I'm going to quote you. Okay? So, from an initial reading of what I did, and I'm glad that you did what you did, there seems to be this sense of protect yourself, close out influences, etc. Now, of course, that's not the end of the story. That would be a pretty frustrating shiur if it was just that. There's the other side, and that is either the need or the natural draw or the benefit, there's where you come in, of not being private. There is a value of privacy to the extent that it carries you. But guess what? There's a value to community and there's a value to publicity and being out there also to the extent that it's right. And even more than that, if you go back to the Rambam that I correctly focused on one piece of and ignored the first piece, which is what you picked up on, what does the Rambam say? Derech b'riyato shel adam liot nimshach b'dayotav ma'asiv u'ma'asav acharei avichavei rav. Forget good for you or bad for you, normal, natural human need and inclination. In other words, it is impossible to say that the Jewish value is cocoon yourself, because that wouldn't be normal. There are times when that's what you need to do and it's the right thing for you to do, but a human in their normal habitat is going to be, by nature, the way God created us, a social, communal being. And in fact, as long as that community is in fact not, call it what you like, then that's what you're going to do, and in fact, that's what you should do. So, yes, I'm immediately calling it back exactly as you pointed it out. And I'll give you some other example of this. Number three is the most classic. If I had to pick one Rambam or one thing, this is the one that I always quote, it's the most famous. HaPoresh Midarchei Tzibur. If someone withdraws from the community and, in fact, moves to a cocoon, and lives in a cave. Afal pishalo avara they wrote, they could be very from there. Really, wow, they are in their private cave and they could be in his boydidus and you know, kishmak. Afal pishalo avara they wrote, you'll never sin. Ela nivdal me'adat Yisrael ve'eno osem mitzvot bichlalan velo nichnas b'tzarotan velo mit'aneh b'tanitam. And therefore, you don't do mitzvot publicly. You do mitzvot, you're very frum, but you don't do it publicly, and you're not part of the community, and you don't identify with the ups and downs of said community. You don't fast their fasts. As if you are a private citizen. You don't get the world to come. In other words, there is a value, an absolute stated Jewish value of being part of a community and being public. To what extent, when it's not in your best influence, that we can debate, as do the sources. What are you supposed to do? How do you? But it's clear that there's a balance here, and privacy rights, my needs, as opposed to communal needs, is always going to be tricky. In general, there are things that reference this in Jewish philosophy from our own practice. Shofar, for example. We know that shofar is uva shofar gadol yitaka. We blow it; it's out loud. It's a big deal. But in the end of the day, the kol demamad daka yishama. It's the silent inner voice, so to speak, of the shofar. Our own souls that mess. So again, public, private. Anyone who took this class with me in MMY knows it's the difference between the way the first set of the Ten Commandments were given and the second set of Ten Commandments were given. The first set of Ten Commandments were given with kolot, brakim, thunder, lightning, public, etc. And the second luchot were actually given just to Moshe, private, quietly, etc. Rav Amital has a beautiful piece on this. That's why the second luchot last and the first luchot don't, because it's not about being out there in public, but rather it's about being much more to yourself in private. So you have that idea. I once spoke at a wedding, the one time that I spoke under a girl's kippah. I use that metaphor of Matan Torah because a marriage, all the minhagim, all the customs of a wedding ceremony, a lot of them come from the Har Sinai and giving the Torah. I spoke about, I don't, and actually I had a child who kind of did this summer. why doesn't everybody elope? Besides the hundreds of thousands of dollars that you will save on the wedding, but it's marriage. It's intimate. It's our personal bonds and vows, and call it whatever language you like. So let's invite 450 strangers, friends of our parents, who we have no interest in whatsoever, and let's invite them to watch. It's a little strange, that whole custom of wedding. So I have a daughter who got married this summer, and we did her wedding actually in two parts. Long story, but the first part, the chuppah, was in my backyard, just the immediate family. It cost us nothing. It was beautiful. And right after that chuppah, a week later was their big wedding, whatever. Everybody, including the chassan and the kala here, said, why are we having another wedding? And 2 minutes later, they realized that they want another wedding, and that was the end of that conversation. It wasn't their money. Well, it was their money. But whatever the case was, why? So this yin and this yang, this public versus private, is this challenge. So from a hashkafic standpoint, we can't just say privacy, not privacy. We kind of, you're always going to have this tension, if you will, in the idea. So that I just wanted to start, just to frame the conversation with a little bit of philosophy before we get into the halachic ins and outs. Okay? Okay. Let's talk now halacha. Planting a webcam in somebody's room, not to share it with anybody else, but simply for you to snoop, because you are interested. Clearly it's us, or we know it. We know that it's going to be prohibited. I don't think anybody would say differently. Why? What's the prohibition? Isn't it interesting, by the way, just from a sociological standpoint, it's the most basic American value that we have is our right to privacy. But if I ask you what is the prohibition in the Torah, and it'll come in 2 seconds, I have no doubt, I'm not worried, but the initial reaction is, oh, we've never thought about it. It's amazing. Yeah.
I don't know if this is what you're going for.
It doesn't matter. Go for it.
Could it be considered stealing? But you're stealing someone's right to have their privacy.
Right. So if we own our privacy, and then I remove that right, then that's stealing. You could say that, by the way, oh lawyer, about any right that somebody takes away. And now, again, if I'm going to put it, if you say it in Hebrew, you see why it becomes a little trickier. That means anytime somebody steals an inalienable right of mine or a human right of mine, it's gezel.
Well, that's what I can say.
Right. If you say it in English, it sounds very sophisticated and right. The minute you put it into halakhic Hebrew terminology, you go, oh, we'll get there. You'll see that. Okay, so maybe it's stealing. Anybody else? Yeah?
Isn't there a Mishnah in, like, Sukkah or Rosh Hashanah where, like, one Talmud comes and, like hides underneath a bed of...
Yes, Menachos. It's Menachos, isn't it?
Oh, it's Menachos? Okay, it could be.
I think it's going to be Menachos. I mean, it might appear more than once, but yeah.
Okay, but, like, in kind of there, like... The objection is more uncomfortable as opposed to privacy violation there.
Interesting. I never would have thought of that. Yes, there is such a Gemara of the Talmud who hides under the bed of his Rebbe, and the Rebbe's not upset. Now, why is the Rebbe not upset? Halachai v'tzrichim lamodot, I believe, is the end of the, or lamedot, is the end of that Gemara, where it's halacha, and we have, a Rebbe's responsible to teach even that. I don't know if one should take that Gemara too literally. You know, I have a feeling, again, I'm not in that sugya. No, Gemara Menachos is something else. So, yeah, but this is what you're referring to, that there's a message there about how us teachers shouldn't be embarrassed to talk about things that are somewhat embarrassing. We have to teach our students those things, too. I'm not aware that anybody would have that. Okay. Anybody else? What would seem to be wrong? Yeah.
I once heard of a concept, like, looking at somebody's house to
exactly. So that's called, and that's not gezel, and there's going to be a big difference between whether you call it gezel or this. This is called hezek re'ia. Okay? He, yud, zayin, kuf, hezek re'ia. Reish, aleph, yud, hey. Hezek is from the word nezek, and you are damaging someone through your eyesight. So it's not gezel. You're not stealing. I don't know if it's any better. You're taking a hammer and you're going like that to their being, even though you don't have a hammer in your hand, okay? Simply by gazing in, you are causing them damage. That is going to be prohibition number one, and there are going to be parameters to that prohibition, and I know that none of you right now are so worried about looking into people's windows, although this is why I said last time I gave the shiur, the room was relevant. As we start to talk about this, we were in I think it was one floor up in a classroom with the window facing that way. I'm sitting there, I guess, and all of the students are sitting here, and I'm talking about the damage that happens when you look in somebody's window and they all start laughing. And I don't understand what I said that was so funny. But the shiur was during the day, and Roblin, that's the name of the dorm that's right there. They're all peering right in. They're on, it's a floor up into everybody's windows right across from here. There are no blinds on those windows over there. And this is what I'm talking about, the halachos. So this, they just, and then I finally said, what's so funny? They said, turn around. So I turn around and I'm literally peering right into somebody's laundry room. So yes, hezek re'iyah. So we need to talk about that. I'm not suggesting you start putting, taking this on as a, start taking it on and putting blinds on everybody's things right across from the Hillel. You can take that on as a Hillel project. But no, but we need to talk about it, okay? There's another thing going on that might be relevant, besides Hezek Re'iyah. Anybody? Okay, it'll be the second piece that we do. Cherem Derabbeinu Gershom. Now, we're familiar with that term in what context? Who knows what Cherem Derabbeinu Gershom prohibited?
Multiple wives.
Multiple wives, right? So that we all know, that men can only marry one wife. According to the Torah, you can have more than one wife. Cherem Derabbeinu Gershom. In certain communities, they said it was on a 500-year Shabbos clock, and that Shabbos clock ran out, so now that it doesn't apply anymore. In certain Sephardic communities, polygamy then is something promoted but allowed. Halakhically, I'm not speaking about civilly. Ashkenazim, we don't say that. We say that, A, we accepted it, and B, it didn't run out, even though there was a time clock on it, not for now. Cherem Derabbeinu Gershom was a long list of things that Rabbeinu Gershom, in the times of the Gaonim, prohibited. The multiple wives was one of them. Reading somebody else's mail was another one. So, again, we're not talking about reading someone's mail. You have to update the technology for modern times. But putting a webcam in somebody's bedroom, even if there's no Lashon Hara component because you're not sharing it with others, would probably be the equivalent of opening their letter. Okay? So those are the two areas that we need to talk about. The devil's in the details about how that might apply to things in our day-to-day lives when we're not planting webcams, but we're doing all sorts of other things without even thinking about it. Okay? Again, do not walk out of here a kook and changing your lives. It's food for thought. Let's be more sensitive to issues of practicing. Okay. I gave this once to ninth graders, and they're all, you'll see what I, when I get to the end, I'll tell you what they were doing. I don't even want to go there. Okay, I created monsters. So we don't want to create monsters. We're mature, sophisticated college students. It's all good. Okay, let's talk about Hezek Re'iyah. The source for Hezek Re'iyah is number four. Okay, and this is what you were referring to. It's the mission in Baba Basra. Lo yiftach adam l'chatzera shutafin petach keneged petach v'chalon keneged chalon. Do not open a window. Do not make a window. Do not open a window right opposite, hello again, somebody else's window or their door right opposite their door. Haya katan lo yasenu gadol. If you have a small window, do not make, and it's already there, do not make a larger window. Echad lo yasenu shnayim. If you have one window, don't make two windows. This is only true if it's in private domain. Aval, poteach ulirishut harab, in petach keneged petach, v'chalon keneged chalon. If it's in a public place where there is no assumption of privacy, then you're allowed to have doors and windows, and that's not, out to the street, that's not the problem. The problem is into somebody else's private domain. Where does this come from? It's famous, says the Gemara, Menahani Mili, Amar of Yochanan to Amar Kra. Now, Rashi helps here, because the Pasuk in the Gemara doesn't tell us the whole thing. It assumes you know all of Chumash by heart. It's Bilam. Bilam comes to the Jewish people. He's brought in to curse them. He sees how they are encamped. Ma ra'ah, what did he see? Ra'ah she'en pitchal aleihem mechuvanim ze lazeh. He saw that the tents were all laid out in such a way, massive urban planning here, that no door to anybody's tent was open to the door of anybody else's tent, so that everybody had their privacy. And therefore he says, Amar ru'yin halalu she'tishra aleihem shechina. And therefore, wow, God's presence belongs here because the people are so private and sensitive to people's privacy. Rashi fills in what should have been in the Gemara, but it's missing. Rashi on the Gemara. Vayar et Yisrael shochein, ra'a heyech shochnin, ulfika chamar matovu alecha. That's the response when Bilam blesses the Jewish people and says, matovu alecha Yaakov, mishkanotecha Yisrael. This is now the historical background, says the Gemara, based on the Mishnah of why he was so impressed and what he said, wow, Jewish people know how to live. I'd like to point out, how many people were living in that camp in the desert? 600,000 men over a certain age. So if you put that now into demographics, you probably have about 3 million people, maybe more, living in a very small area. I don't know if anybody is studying this here. I don't know if they have urban planning it's probably not an undergrad degree in this country. In England, I know I have students who are doing urban planning. It's very cool. It is basically the game Rush Hour, just larger, where you have to move every... Can you imagine trying to get every tent with the door facing... It's a major project. Not to mention, they moved in the desert. Granted, only 48 times over 40 years, but they moved. And there's topography. I guess it's a desert. It's flat. I don't know, but maybe there's one. Can you imagine every time that somebody had to sit there and they had no computers? So it's not like we have Miss Physics over there sitting there drawing out the computer thing on her calculator and whatever. That somebody had to do this. It took effort. It didn't come from God. So we see from this the value. Okay. I have the following question, though, on the halacha. I understand that you shouldn't make a window opposite somebody's window, but if a window's already there, what's the problem making it larger? If I have one window, why can't I make two? The window's there already. I'm not causing any more damage, am I? So what might be at play here? It's a very important halachic point. If I already have a window, I'm not allowed to make it larger. I can see into the guy's room already anyway, so what difference does it make if I have a second window? Yeah.
Well, generally, you're held responsible for your actions that come about. So when you're taking action to perform what would be considered like an aveira or something that causes damage on their person, then you'd be held responsible. But if something's already there, you haven't done anything, therefore you haven't done anything.
Okay, so you're saying it's the act of making a window, and even though this window is not adding any added value or lack of value to the situation, it's the action itself. That's a very brisk, you could do that. I don't think it makes sense because here, what's the whole point? Damages goes on based on the damage. If there's no damage, there's no damage. I'm not aware that there's a prohibition to take a hammer and go like this because if somebody's head was underneath it, it would be damaging, so now I'm not allowed to go like this either. Okay? I hear it, but I... It
creates more damage.
What creates more damage? Why?
It's a bigger opportunity for other
people. Okay. You could claim... Again, this would be, the optics people here. You now have more angles, you have a better view. You could suggest that. Yeah. There you go. The hezek re'ia is the emotional damage, the feeling of violation that is felt by the other person, which does not have to be mathematical or rational. You open up a second window, it's really not accomplishing anything, but the level of violation that other person on the other side is going to feel, that's what's going on here. And that is critical to understand the halachos of hezek re'ia. It doesn't, you could sit there and, I'm not really hurt, it does not matter. The psychological damage, the feeling of violation, that's where the damage causes. And think about why. If I just spent $100,000 to renovate my living room, and now somebody puts a second window across and I feel violated, I'm not going to be comfortable in my own living room. So even if they never look, I am not going to feel comfortable. Okay, let's put this in practical halakhic terms. Are you allowed to plant a broken webcam in somebody's bedroom? It's broken. You're not peeping in on them. Right, and even, by the way, if they know it's broken?
I don't really know.
Would anybody here feel comfortable getting dressed or undressed in front of a camera, even if it's set on it with a big sign, don't worry, this is broken? I doubt it. Okay? I doubt it. That's just basic human psychology. And once you point out that what's going on here is a psychological damage as opposed to an actual reality damage, that will change it. I'll just point out two interesting things. Number five, what if you're justified in peeping in on somebody? For example, they have your property and they owe it back to you. Are you allowed to barge into their house to claim it back? The answer is no. I would assume that's true in American law as well here. But says it's a pasuk in Chumash. Ki tashever echa mashet mu'uma. Lo tavol beitol la'avod avato. When you lend somebody something and they don't pay it back and they owe it, you are not allowed to go into their house to claim it. Bachutz tamod ve'isha sherata noshebo yotzi elecha ta'avod achutz. They have to... You have their collateral. You're supposed to give it back to them. They want it back. They have every rights to their property. They're not allowed to come into your house to take their collateral back. You have to knock on the door, ring the bell, ask permission, and come in. And by the way, what if they don't give it back? What should you do?
Sue
them. Exactly. Okay? You can't go into somebody's house, even if it's justified. Why? Hezek. In this case, not Re'iyah, but it's Nezek. So even when it's justified, anything that comes under Hezek Re'iyah, it could be justified, it could be this, it could be that, it could only be psychological, not real. All of that is Nezek, and you're going to get clunked. Number six, tshuva literature. Love tshuva literature. First wide line. Shamati deravichad pasak. Tehuadin im hayachalon shel schuchit kavua b'masmerim misaviv. Let's say you have, I don't know if it's called a window. Someone once argued with me, it's not a window if you can't open it. If you have a glass pane, and it's sealed, it's a glass, it's a, what I would call a window, but it doesn't open. I don't know my terms on this. But anyway, I call that a window. You have a window, but it doesn't open. You're not allowed to change that window to make it a window that can open. Why not? It's a glass window. What am I changing? So what does he say? You can't compare what it looks like to look through a window than looking live when there's no window. But Sarachian and the Pisrei Tshuva is not so sure. But I am Tshuvas Avkat Rochel and Marana Beis Yosef. He quotes the Mechaber in the Shulchan Aruch. Reuven Sherotzel Liftoach Chalon Al Ginatel Shel Shimon. Reuven wants to knock a window into his that looks into Shimon's garden. And he's going to put glass over it. And Shimon takes him to court because he says, "Hey, you're damaging me." He says, because glass, I don't care that you're putting a glass over the hole, that, like the Flintstones, over the, it can break. But it's not broken. So why is it not mutter? Psychology. So what can you do, by the way, and the Pesach is going to say this later, why is it it's never mutter to open up a window, to make windows? What do you have to do?
You can open it.
But it, you can still see your neighbor. It's called blinds. if you build it with block, but the point is, what I wanted to show you again, built into the halakhic system about Hezek Re'iyah is privacy. So now let's say this was Jewish college and somebody built a dorm or a hillel, whichever came first, the chicken and the egg, right across. Is that allowed or not? Why are you saying yes? You're supposed to say no, right?
I don't think so.
So why yes? It's Hezek Re'iyah, is it not?
Why can't someone build a dorm right there?
Without blinds, there are no curtains, none. It seems, why is it mutter?
Well, currently, if we have blinds, you know that
one. Oh, okay, you do have blinds, right? Okay, they don't. But
no, they do.
Oh, they do?
They just don't use them.
Oh, they just don't. Oh, okay, that made that. So, okay, so I guess that's fine. I mean, that makes more sense. I feel a lot better.
How do the blinds work? Because if the burden of the proof is on the person building the next right there, let's say Hillel exists and they're building the apartment building across, and they build it with blinds. So if I'm looking from here, I have windows, I can still see in there. They can open their blinds, still see into me. Like
right. So some people will claim blinds are not good enough. You need frosted windows. And by the way, if you would take them to court in America, you might come up with the exact same. Hezek Re'iyah is not limited to, it's a value, right? So frosted windows is different than blinds, because blinds break. Exactly. Okay? So you have that issue. In the 1500s in Sfat, the psak was that you can have windows facing windows, because think about it. It's impossible to build a community that way. I don't know how they did it in the desert. It's not possible, right? As long as there's a certain distance between the windows. So why was that allowed? And here, this is very important in halacha lemaisa in our communities. When a person moves into a neighborhood, especially if the neighborhood is already built, they can see where the windows are. If they don't like the level of privacy, they're not going to buy there. By the fact that you buy and you see how the neighborhood is built, that shows that you are okay with the level of damage, and after all, think about why. Because it's psychological. So if in your community this becomes the norm, the halacha goes away and it's mutter. Some people will claim, lamaisa, in our generation, in America, let's say, in Israel this would never work, but in America it does, zoning laws. See, in Israel, they don't listen to the zoning laws. Or you bribe the guy who made the zoning laws and that, you know, so it doesn't help. I'm from Beit Shemesh. It's just the way, well, maybe it won't work that way anymore, but up until a week ago, it did. But zoning laws. So as long as you move into a place that has zoning laws, you're moving in with the knowledge that those are the zoning laws, and that gives up your rights to any higher level of privacy than what already exists. So it's interesting that there's a real combination of secular law and Jewish law on these titles, on these issues, because there are zoning laws. Now, there's a problem with the zoning law. It's called the variance. You can appeal to your local zoning board and ask for an exception to the zoning laws. Now, I moved into a neighborhood based on the zoning laws. I didn't necessarily agree to a variance. When I moved to Teaneck, I moved from Bogota to Teaneck. My father was an optometrist. There was a law in the zoning laws of Teaneck that if you open up a business in your house, you need to make 2 parking spots. So we applied for I was 9 years old, but we applied for a variance. People contested it. They did not want us moving in. Another Frum family, now it's not a big deal, but then another religious family moving to Teaneck. So we had to go to the local town council meeting. And the judge, or whoever it was, kept saying, you don't understand, you can't stop them from moving in. You can't even stop them from opening up the business. The only thing they're asking for is not to have to rip up their front lawn to build 2 asphalt parking spots. So think about that but they couldn't, whatever. So somebody got up and they said, we don't want an optometrist moving into the neighborhood because it's going to bring people who can't see driving on our streets. So the judge threw that out and he says, well, we hope that by the time they walk out of the guy's office, they'll be seeing better. And we got our variance and we didn't have to rip up our thing. But if you think about it, a variance is a problem. So there are some people who will say that variances in Judaism are not therefore accepted in halakha because of that. And you have to go by the zoning laws at the time when you moved in. And other people claim, no, variances are built into the law because the option of a variance exists. Okay, so there's all sorts of real halakha lamaisa tension that goes on with these issues, hezek re'ia, etc. Lamaisa, the way we paskin is that we go by social norms. Whatever is a realistic assumption of privacy needs to be honored. Wherever there is not a normal assumption of privacy, you don't. Is this familiar to anybody? Are there signs hanging in this building about this? When you walk in, I don't know what the laws are in Pennsylvania, but are there... If you've ever visited Yeshiva University, have you seen the signs hanging in every single freaking building in YU? I don't mean YU, the men. You walk into a building in Yeshiva University, there are big, gigantic signs everywhere. Please understand that by walking into this building, I'm paraphrasing now, you give up your right to privacy. And we have the right to use your image in every publication and everything. There are signs everywhere. Why? Because the lawyers in YU are scared of YU getting sued. And they are right. So if you see, you have signs like that. We have signs like that in MNY. There's a big sign right outside, right in the front door. The public areas are under surveillance. Why? Because there was a case a few years ago, it wasn't a seminary, but in an institution of higher learning, where they were trying to catch a thief, so they planted cameras in the dormitory to try to catch the thief. The female students of that institution found out about the hidden cameras, were weirded out that there were hidden cameras in their thing, and the director of that institution was forced out. It's not my job, but I'm just saying his intentions were pure. They're just trying to catch a thief. He was going to have a woman watch the video. I have no idea. But you can't do that. Why? Because there's an assumption of privacy in a dormitory. Is there an assumption of privacy right now where we are sitting, besides the fact that Rabbi Chernov is recording this year? Is there an assumption of privacy, or is this under surveillance and cameras? None of us know, do we? Okay. Is there a sign at the entrance to the building, or am I going to sue the University of Pennsylvania? No, I'm joking. But the idea is an assumption of privacy. You should know that the law in the state of Israel is that there's an assumption of privacy in, like, bedrooms and bathrooms. There is not an assumption of privacy in any public area. So why did I put up a sign on the public area of MMY if there is an assumption of, if there's no assumption of privacy in the hallways, in the public areas? Because even if I'll win in court, I don't want to get sued. I want the case thrown out before it ever gets to the court. So when that whole story happened in another institution, we put up signs to solve the lawsuit. So the next time you see those signs in public buildings and you'll start noticing them, now you understand a little bit why. Yeah?
So we said that the problem with privacy was this, like,
damage that it causes psychologically.
Yeah.
Can you go more into, like, what is the nature of that damage? As in, like, what happens if different people, like, if invasion of privacy wouldn't cause a psychological damage, does that become...
Right. So in general, we go by the norm. Now, how you measure that, I don't know. It's in Aramaic, the halakhic term is called an umdana. It's an assumption or an evaluation of basic norm. And that could change, by the way, from generation to generation. The point is once it's called damage as opposed to stealing, it's more slip-sliding because what's damaging can change from person to person. It's not stealing, which is a much more objective type of thing, which we'll see in a minute. Okay, so I can't tell you the psychology. Any of the psychology majors around the table can probably fill you in on what the psychology of a human being is in terms of their own self-dignity and privacy. That's not my field. But whatever is considered, and maybe in our generation, maybe it's less. I'll get at the end when I give you very practical things to watch out for. Maybe that'll make it a little clearer. Okay, let's move on to the next. Flip over your page to the... I'm not going to finish by 7, but I'm keeping an eye on the clock for you. Hezek Re'iyah. Hezek Re'iyah, we did. Now we're talking about Cherem Dor Ben Gershom. The Cherem Dor Ben Gershom I gave you here an example of in number 8. We'll get back to number 7 in a minute. Cherem Shelo Lirot Bechtav Chaveiro Sheshalech Lechaveiro B'li Yediyato Asur. You're not allowed to read somebody else's mail without their consent and without their knowledge. V'imzar Kamutar. Once the person, however, throws it into the garbage can, then it is allowed. I gave the shiur your year in MMY, which now you don't remember, but I gave it in Yerucham. And the reason I gave it Lizzie's year, this is Lizzie, by the way, I read it, gave the shiur in MMY her year on a particular Shabbaton that we had, was because a few days before that Shabbaton, there were girls going through the garbage cans in the office. They were so anxiety-ridden about who their roommates were going to be on this tiyul. This is ringing a bell. Okay, she's turning red. Anyway, so the administrators responsible for the tiyul felt violated, and they came to me as the director of the school that I have to get up in front of the base medrash and I have to reprimand the students. Now, reprimanding students usually doesn't work. It just gets them angry. So you have to find a thing. So I thought about it. What am I going to do? They were really angry. It was a hoover. Boy, was she mad. Anyway, so I said, I have an idea. I have a shiur on the topic. I'll give the shiur on Shabbos afternoon. So I gave the shiur on Shabbos afternoon right after lunch. Yeah, let's talk about evasion. They had no idea what was coming. And at the end of the shiur, boy, did I nail into them for going through the garbage cans. Of course, one girl immediately points out, I don't understand. Hoover threw it in the garbage. V'imzar ko mutar. Why are you yelling at us? Okay, so I pointed out, now read the version in number 9, Din Takanas Rabbeinu Gershom. He quotes all sorts of other things, I don't even know what they are. End of the wide line there, V'shalo lirot b'chtav, sheshaleach adam l'chaveira, b'li yediyatov, v'li reshutov, you're not allowed to read somebody else's mail without their knowledge and without their permission. Compare number 9 to number 8. Number 9 left out the piece about once you throw it out, that it's okay. So I said in MMY, we're possibly like the Kolbo against the Maharam Mintz, and you shouldn't be going through people's garbage cans. But that was a joke. But basically, that was the idea. This is called Cherem Dor Ben Gershom. You are not allowed to read somebody's mail. Now, a cherem, in general, is a very strong term. We put someone in cherem. There's a debate in general whether the Cherem Dor Ben Gershom, like not marrying more than wife, etc., is just a fancy name for something that's prohibited. But if it's just a fancy name for something that's prohibited, why is it called the Cherem of Rabbeinu Gershom? Why don't we call it the Isser of Rabbeinu Gershom? So again, for the sake of time, I'll spare you, but just know that it's a Ramban in number 10, where at the end of Parshas Bechukosai, the Torah basically says there's a thing called a Cherem and it comes with a death penalty. So the traditional approach, Rashi's approach is it has to do with karbanos and death penalty, people paying off to get themselves off death row, and It means stuff that has to do with death penalty stuff. The Ramban disagrees, and at the end of the ... he basically says when the rabbis make something under the title of a cherem, it's a rabbinic law that they take very seriously, and we kill you if you violate it. So if you take that to its logical conclusion now, if you read somebody else's mail, and if the cherem de Rabbeinu Gershom means this is a rabbinic law that Rabbeinu Gershom made, and he was really darn serious about it, and we're going to kill you for it, so invading somebody's privacy, if it's a violation of Cherem Dor Ben Gershom, might be a very serious prohibition of Torah law. Okay? Not that damaging somebody with a hammer is any less, but it's now coming with that extra turn of cheren. What's the reason for not reading somebody's mail? There are three possibilities that I know of. What's pro? Why can't you read somebody's mail? Why were they so angry about it?
Embarrassing.
Lashon hara. But wait a minute. If I read somebody's mail and I don't say it over to anybody, like the webcam of Tyler Clementi, why is it lashon hara? So some claim there's lashon hara even if you don't say it to anybody else because you're saying it to yourself. So there is such a debate in the poskim. So lashon hara is a possibility. What else is possible?
Stealing.
It's somebody else's mail. Here there's actual physical stealing. That's the second possibility. And the third possibility?
Maybe an extension of
that desert ria. Yes. Because that's lashon hara. Once I have the info, then all lashon hara would be hezek ria. So yes. Something much more basic that nobody ever thinks of. What?
Texas.
Oh, you're checking in the middle. I shouldn't air our dirty laundry in public. Okay. How about the haftal rechel kamocha, just being nice to people? You wouldn't want someone, right? So those are three possibilities. Now, why is this relevant? Let's talk about lashon hara. Let's say reading somebody else's mail is lashon hara. We all know this. What makes lashon hara permitted? We throw it around all the time. Oh. Litoelet, if it's for a positive value, right? So it could be, one could claim, if I'm reading somebody else's mail, because it's in their interest, I'm the parent of a child and I'm worried about what my kid is up to, I'm just giving an example or something like that, that might mitigate it, okay? So that's a possibility. If it's the ahavta l'recha kamocha, this is not a PC comment, but it happens to be somewhat true halachically. So don't judge the PC-ness of it, but just be aware. If it's the ahavta l'recha kamocha, if that's the prohibition, it might only apply if you read the mail of l'reach. Yeah, you can say it, it's okay.
A Jew.
But reading a non-Jewish person's mail would not necessarily be a problem. It's not PC, and I'm not suggesting that we adopt this as a policy of life. But there are people who suggest it, okay? And what if it's gezel? And this is the most important one. If the issue is stealing, how can I mitigate that? Stealing from a non-Jew is still prohibited. Now I'm being PC again. If I steal from a non-Jew, I'm not allowed to steal from a non-Jew. So if the issue is stealing, I can't read a non-Jew's mail either. Nebuch, if it's only via haftal rechel kamocha, then we could debate it. If it's gezel, if it's stealing, how do I get around it? Right. If the person gives permission, it's called mechila. Now you understand the debate, perhaps, about if they threw it in the garbage. Once it's in the garbage and they didn't shred it, they're saying, I don't care if my information... In other words, Ahuva should have shredded the rooming list. It's her problem. And by throwing it in her garbage can, she's showing mechila. And if that could be... Again, that might be the debate between number 8 and number 9. And that debate could be, what's the prohibition in the first place? Because if the prohibition was lashon hara, you're not allowed to give up your right. You can't say, I don't mind if people tattletale about me. Then what you said before, it's the act as opposed to the damage is true. Okay? So what it is exactly is relevant to when it becomes mutter and under what circumstances and can I be mochel and can I give up my rights to it? Is it only to a Jew? Is it a non-Jew? All of those type of things. I'll just mention one last thing and then I'm going to nail you all with the practical ramifications of this that affect all of our lives. Number 11. Okay? Now that you're out of the stage of being, you know, like high school, seminary, yeshiva age people, and you're older, so this is less damaging to you, put yourself back in your school, your elementary school days, and enjoy this one. Is a school administrator, not that I'm one of those, this is just an example, allowed to entrap their student if they fear that they're doing something wrong? Can you snoop on your students? Can the police snoop on their citizens, halachically? Now, we all are Americans, so we all say no, right? Well, Mishnah says, ha-me-sit ze-hedjot, va-me-sit te-hedjot. The Mishnah is talking about people who get other people to do avodah zarah. How are you going to catch somebody getting somebody else to idol worship? I understand you can catch the idol worshiper, you see them in their worship, but the me-sit, the guy who got him to worship the idols in the first place, how are you ever going to catch him? You need to eavesdrop on him. You need to bug his telephone. You need to catch him telling the other guy, hey, This is a nice idea, idol worship. So the Gemara tells us how to do this. Get him to turn on his light inside his house. And you put witnesses outside his house without light. If the guy's got light inside his room and there's no light on the outside of the room, you can, and there are no blinds, you can see right into his room. You plant somebody in the guy's house with the light on the inside, you get him into the conversation. Hey, what do you think? And then you get the guy to become a Macy. You're basically putting in a recording device, catching him, and then the police, you've seen it all on TV, and then the guys come in and arrest him. So you're basically setting the guy, you're entrapping the guy. This is a Gemara that you're allowed to do this to stop somebody from getting somebody else to do a Avodah Zarah. There are sources. I believe it's a Rashba. So there are Rishonim who say that, and again, it goes to the Litoelet thing, if it's Lashon Hara, etc., that you can do it. Now, I wouldn't. Don't worry. Everyone on my MMY goes now. No, but the concept that somebody could claim that Cherem Darabeno Gershom is, you now see this coming up in now we're getting closer to practical terms. Yeah.
But in that case, you were trying to catch someone who's getting someone else to do Avodah Zarah. So then in your MMY case, you have to think that MMY girl was trying to convince other MMY girls.
You could claim that this heter of entrapment is limited to someone who is Machtiya Tarabim, who's just a bad influence on others. And that is this case. It's talking about this, but who says maybe imagine you have a first grade kid and he's into bad stuff, and if I stop him now in first grade, I won't have to put him in jail when he's in fifth grade. So it's in his interest that it's the parent. A parent read a kid's diary?
But if the Gemara meant a case where you're stopping someone from doing something wrong, then they would have put that in there.
Right. Well, you could limit it to this specific type of case. The Rashba doesn't. It's a tshuva Rashba, I forgot where, but the point is the idea being that all of these things have parameters and all of these things have workarounds, and it makes for great conversation, and the idea of privacy but not at all costs becomes very real. Yeah.
What about the collecting information that may or may not become relevant for you?
So that goes to the government thing that I was talking about. Right now you're giving out information, who cares? It's not relevant, so who cares if I give out my social security number, right? And who cares if I read your social security number? But 2 years from now, that social security number is sitting on my computer, let's say, and now it gets hacked. There are laws about this now. There are laws about, by the way, Europe is ahead of America on this. They just passed a law in Europe, the GDPR, the GDPR, whatever it is. I am not allowed to give out. I never gave out my students' personal information. We tell them this, we don't give out their information. So we do not give out their addresses, their phone numbers, their emails. We don't give it out to anybody who asks. Sorry, there was a lawsuit in a seminary once about this where they gave address lists to whoever, and like for mailings, Gilly's goodies, and that type of stuff. So we don't ever do that. In Europe now, it's illegal even to give out names. Names. And that's a problem, because if somebody hacks my computer, I got everybody's names on my computer. So we have to we're investigating. We might have to erase our European students' names from our alumni lists. Good luck tracking down the Europeans if their names are not allowed to be on our computer, if it's going to be a violation of the whatever it is. You know what I'm saying? There are real things about this. And again, the question is halacha. Now, here's where it affects all of us. Till now, who cares? Put blinds up, not such a big deal. We talked about some interesting cases. Can you read your kid's diary? All of that. Posting pictures. Are you allowed to post pictures without the explicit... Everyone's getting scared now. Is Instagram mutter? 10 years ago, it was Facebook mutter, but I'd be dating myself. Is Instagram mutter? Are these things mutter? Well, I'll tell you a story from this morning. My MMY students on Friday are going to get a newsletter put out by the great Rabbi Charnov. So I was asked to write something fresh, because we just had an alumni Shabbaton this weekend. So unless it gets vetoed or changed between now and Friday, I decided specifically to write about people who weren't necessarily on the Shabbaton. That was my angle. I have to write something exciting. Anyway, yesterday a group sent me a picture of themselves. They were doing an NCSY Shabbaton in upstate New York. So I got a picture of my MMYers doing upstate NCSY. So I suggested that we should do my article piece. And it's a picture. It's a cute picture. Post a picture. And I sent the picture to Rabbi Charnov. It was sent to me by Ariella Benevitz last night. And I sent it to Rabbi Charnov to put in Friday's newsletter on the assumption that we go through this. I'm then preparing this. You can't make this stuff up. And here it is. You become a nut with this stuff. Ariella Benevitz, one second. Here it is. Am I even allowed to read my communication with her? By the way, remember, if I throw it in the garbage, it's mutter, right? Really? If somebody sends me a letter and I throw it in the garbage, are you allowed to read it? Let's say I give you permission.
No.
No, because I didn't ask the sender. Now you understand the kolbo? I don't have rights to give up their privacy rights on the letter that they sent for me. Those legal things on the bottom of email, sometimes this is only for the intended, right? These things are real, folks. So anyway, I'll find it. One second, I'll find it. So I don't even know if it's mutter for me to read this, but this is what happens. You become a nut. Here it is. She sent me the picture. I then wrote at 8:26 a.m. as I was reviewing my notes, I trust you are okay if we post this picture, ? And then she wrote back, yep, so now I feel, with a smiley, so now I feel comfortable posting the picture. Is it mutter to post pictures with other people who posed with you, forget forwarded pictures, on your Instagram? What do you think?
Yes.
Why?
Because there's such an assumption.
Because there's such an assumption when you pose for a picture with somebody that it's going to get posted. When I prepared the shiur 8 years ago, how do I evaluate this? I knew this was going to come up. So I took a poll. Because what is it based on? Assumption of privacy. So how do you test, this goes to your question, how do you test the assumption of privacy? You take a random sampling poll of what the average person does. So I sampled 30 girls in MMY. This was 8 years ago, when I prepared the shiur the first time, the majority assumption was, when you are in a picture, that it will not be posted. When I gave the shiur again 2 years later, I updated the poll, and it had totally changed in those 2 years. So between 2010 and 2012, the assumption, nowadays I think for sure, totally mutter. What if somebody sends you a picture like this? It's not my picture. I didn't pose. You didn't pose with it. They sent me a picture. Am I allowed to post it without their permission? Now, they might be mochel. They might not care, but how do I know? So I had a freak out this morning. I said, if I post this picture, for all I know, I have no way to predict. I think it's normal. But maybe, whoever it'll be in that picture, Sarah Engel, will say, I didn't like the way my hair looked. You know, sorry. No, okay. I don't like the way my hair looked. Please take down the picture. Or I was trained by my parents not to show up on the internet because one day I'm going to apply for a job and they're going to see that I'm standing next to a girl with a funny, weird bow in her hair, or I'm standing next to a girl that's going like the M in MMY, and I don't want to be, because then I'm not, I don't know that.
It sure goes up. We're not posting this picture anymore.
Right. Just saying. So we don't know that. So are you allowed to post people's picture without their permission? I'm not sure. Can you forward an email? That we all do. I'm not sure. I will tell you, when Facebook started a few weeks ago, their forwarding thing, that now when you forward a message, at least you know that it's a forwarded message. I said Hallel, because of this. At least if I'm going to forward a message, it should be clear that it was forwarded. It doesn't say who it's forwarded from. That's an interesting... But at least these things are really... So I'm not telling you to change anything on your Instagram. I had eighth grade girls when I gave the shiur. Oh, my God, I have to cancel my... You know how it is. So, you know, deep breath. It's all good. But it is something to be sensitive to. The same way that I was sensitive to these girls and I sent them a simple message, do you mind if we post it? And they said, yes. I do think it's a good practice to get into because... But again, I think that when you're posing a picture, I think you're correct. The last thing, and I'm sorry that we went the full hour, but that's how I am. I knew it. I want to share with you one last thing, a food for thought as we do this. We all think that privacy is... If I would have taken a poll at the beginning of the year, how many of you think privacy is a value? You would... Every single... We all think privacy is a value. Not to mention that we're American Israelis, you know. my Israeli Tuvia, our Israeli fix-it guy, comes over to me on Monday and last week, and he asks me, "Who am I voting for?" I live in Beit Shemesh; it's a big deal. Who am I voting for in the election? I don't know why it is not exactly clear, but okay. Who are you voting for in the election? I turned to him and I said, "Tuvia, ani Amerikai." Now, he turns to me and says, "Oh, so you're not voting? You're not a citizen?" I said, no, that's not what I meant. What I meant is I'm an American, and you don't ask an American who they're voting for in honor of Election Day this week. It's a taboo topic. I said to him, I said, "Tuvia, yeshnei dvarim she'asur lish'ol. Aleph, al mi matzbiim, who are you voting for? And bet, what is it also prohibited to ask? Every Israeli does it.
How much money do you make?
Tuvia's reaction was, "Surely Sholitzer? I'm telling you. Mamashka," and he's the sweetest, nice guy in the world. But it was. So Israelis maybe don't get this. No, we're all one big happy family. There's no privacy. If you go in a bus and your kid is not dressed properly, they're going to yell at you, the whole thing. It's all true. But Americans, we all value privacy, right? When this story comes out and I tell you the horrible story of Tyler Clementi and how he got outed by a webcam, everybody was horrified by that story. Why wouldn't you? Even without the LGBTQ part of it, it's irrelevant. Any human being, we all would feel horrible and terrible about it because we value privacy, right?
Wrong,
because we put all of our lives on the internet for everybody else to look in on us, and we barely think twice about it at all. We care about privacy, but then we act, we all do it. We all, without even thinking, we are so public. I found this online way back when, so translate it for the modern technology. It was about Facebook, and it was in Hebrew. It was on the Kippah website. But I love ending the shiur with this. Of course, I now am not finding it right when I need it, but I know I have it here, so give me 1 second. There it is. The title of the article is Migdal Bavel Moderni, the Modern Tower of Babel. What was the sin of the Dor HaPalagah, the people who built that tower? A lot of interpretations, of course. Na'aseh lanu shem. Let's live in a global world. In cyberspace, let's put ourselves out there. We'll be famous. We post everything. We post our emotions. We post every picture of every vacation as if everybody in the whole wide world really cares, etc., etc., and we're out there. And basically what the point of this article was, the erasure of privacy, is that maybe if we really value privacy, it starts with our own privacy, that maybe we need to value more. And maybe what we post, how we post, where we post, needs to be thought through a little bit more carefully than maybe before. And if the shiur sent, and again, without any practical things, and I don't speak the technology, I have none of this stuff, and I have no interest in any of this stuff. And everybody thinks I have Facebook because the MLY Facebook page is in my name. I don't have Facebook. I don't know how to use Facebook. I can't spell Facebook. And Kal Vachomer, I don't have Instagram, and I don't. I have zero interest in any of these things because if I would get on it, I would never get off. So that's anyone who knows me knows that it would be there's two things you never want me to have: social media or an intercom. Those two things would be, if I could make an announcement, those two things would be death to my students. But maybe the Mr. Haskell of the shiur is that when we talk about privacy, about what we have to respect for others, we have to start with self-respect for ourselves. One day, we might be mortified about the things that we ourselves put out there, and then etc. And I think with the tragic story of Tyler Clementi, it goes to a culture. And we're part of that culture. And the culture, and we create that culture. When you create a culture of putting everything out there, literally the Tower of Babel, and we do that because we promote ourselves. That's how we promote ourselves, with our social media pages and everything else like that. We're contributing to what I think could be a very damaging culture. And for that alone, it takes an extra pause to think back, to take a step out and to think about what we're putting, how we're putting, to become a little bit of a nut when it's dealing with other people's privacy in ways that maybe we didn't think of before. Questions? Comments? Questions? Thank you. It was a pleasure to be here.
Thank you.